Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop all your texts, all your voicemails. Matt went through all of the texts in our mailbag yesterday, and we are going to hit on all your voicemails, too, on tomorrow's episode. So lead you guys into the weekend with some fun calls and some pretty good calls, all provided by you guys. So you guys can hit us up at 331-979-1369 if you want to drop us a call or a text. Or you can tweet at us, again, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Two preseason games in now. Very, very excited for what I'm seeing throughout these two preseason games. And specifically last night, watching the 10 guys that I presume will be a part of this collective rotation. Played really well last night, Matt. But the only thing I have to start this podcast with is, holy shit, does Zach LaVine look different than he did last year? I think the NBA needs to watch out because he's about to put people on notice, man. How you doing, though?
What up, Jordan? What up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, I really enjoyed watching their second preseason game against New Orleans Wednesday night. Obviously, Zach LaVine, certainly a big takeaway from that game. A very efficient 28 points for him. He was cooking from behind the three-point line. He was attacking. He was hitting his driving lanes. You know, getting to the basket with ease. And I'm completely with you, 100% on board. You know, and I even think when I was having my doubts about Zach at times through the early stages of this rebuild, you were always, you know, firm in your belief that Zach LaVine was going to prove a lot of people wrong, prove doubters wrong, take the league by storm. And he looks poised for a true breakout all-star season. I mean, I know we talk about him maybe not getting enough credit or as getting the credit he deserved maybe for last season's performance just because the Bulls were so unwatchably bad as a whole. But, you know, averaging 23 points, upping his assist numbers on top of that. But, I mean, I think we could see another significant jump from Zach to really put himself on the map of the elite players in this league this season because he just looks better than everybody else on the court when he's on a court with nine other guys.
Take away the last 8 minutes of that fourth quarter last night, and this game was legitimately fun to watch. Like, it's I don't know, maybe I was so caught up last year in all 82 games of having to watch terrible basketball that now it's just kind of refreshing to see guys out there that you actually want to watch play basketball. For me, this was exciting, though, and starting with Zach LaVine here, the effortlessness, man, and I don't know if it's attributed to the workouts that he does over the offseason, but that one thing that we were talking about a lot throughout the offseason is his training in the sand. Seems like it's already starting to pay off. I don't know about you, but to me, it just looked like his bounce and his leap was just so effortless last night when he was going to make dunks. And like thinking about the crossover move he made on Lonzo Ball to cut between two guys, and it was like two steps and just an easy dunk to the right side. Like those types of dunks he makes look so effortless, and those types of moves he makes so effortless. That's what's getting me excited. It seems like all of that athleticism, that bounce that we were fully looking for is back. And so I think he's ready to have a big year. And that's not even to go to say about his three-point shooting. His three-point shooting looked fantastic last night. So anything else that you took away from Zach LaVine last night that impressed you?
I did also see some improved effort on the defensive end. That's still, you know, something that we're hoping we see marked improvement from Zach and his game to really be talked about as not just an elite offensive player, but being in the elite upper echelon of total NBA player, you know, everything that they bring to their game. You know, and look, I still think that, you know, mechanically, and there are certain possessions where he gets lost a little bit, but at least I saw it in their first preseason game, the effort is there from Zach, and that's the first step, especially when you think about what he has at his disposal, and sometimes it is just a matter of effort on the defensive end. So much of being a solid defensive player is about effort. I've seen that from Zach, too, which is really nice. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the three-point shooting. He looks like a elite three-point shooter. Certainly did last night. And, you know, the bounce, like, my God, the guy is just flying above rims. And I think when you saw him play with, you know, that other, you know, the other four in that starting lineup, and again, you know, this will be assuming that Wendell is healthy for October 23rd and you sub him in for Felicio, or even have times where maybe Thad Young gets, you know, a run with that starting five. But the way that LaVine was playing with Satoransky, Otto, and Markkanen, I mean, they played really damn well together. And Zach certainly is the focus. He looks like the primary guy for this team on the offensive end. I think that's probably what we should bank on seeing for the most part this season. Markkanen will have his nights where he, you know, blows up, but LaVine is going to take this team as far as he can, and they had a lot of chemistry. Not only the individual performance of LaVine, but you think about some of the assist numbers that we saw last night. And, you know, LaVine only had one himself, but two of his starting mates, Otto and Satoransky, each had 8. Markkanen had 4. The Bulls at halftime had assisted on 24 of their 30 made baskets. 80% of their made baskets were assisted. That is unlike anything we saw last season.
Yeah, and that, I'm glad you brought that up, because they finished the game with 38 assists, which, again, like you said, it is something that we didn't see a whole lot of last year. And I think that's the biggest thing that I noticed throughout these preseason games. And again, I'm trying to take it with a grain of salt, but it's good because we're getting to see actual rotation guys in some of these rotations that we're going to see throughout the regular season. And that was the one thing that I noticed, too, is each one of these rotations that was playing together, whether it was the second unit or the starters at times, every person was looking to make that extra pass. There was 3 or 4 or 5 times throughout this game where guys were just kicking it around the three-point line, and all of a sudden they were finding an open shooter, whether it was Coby White, whether it was Lauri Markkanen. I think Thaddeus Young got open twice and knocked down 2 threes where he was that extra pass into a wide-open shot. Look, those types of things we were not seeing last year. Most of the time it was a kick out to a guy, and a guy was shooting a contested three, or a guy was trying to drive to the lane, getting hammered by 3 guys. It seems now that the drive to the basket and they're kicking out and making extra passes, which is I love to see, and you love to see that too from any of the rotation guys you have in there. So the ability and the key for the Bulls is going to be moving the ball and keeping that ball moving. And last year we saw a lot of stagnated offense, and it's going to help the Bulls too, I think. Not slow the offense down, not have to run plays constantly, but actually just be able to get out there and run, pass the ball, move it, and find open shooters. And I think the Bulls have enough of those guys, not only passers, but also willing shooters as well, to kind of make things fun, make things exciting, and also open things up for a lot of these other guys. So that was the other thing that I noticed, is just the willingness for all of these guys to pass, especially the ones that are going to take up most of the rotation minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw something closer to the real thing on Wednesday night as far as Boylan's rotation. You know, you still did see some of the back end of the bench scrubs playing in the fourth quarter, which, you know, we don't have to talk about because that fourth quarter went pretty poorly. But I think especially getting Cornette back from that turf toe after he sat out on Monday, other than Felicio being like the Keith Bogans of preseason where he starts and then we never see him again, I think that's basically what you saw last night. Cornette coming in, I think he is going to get the edge over Daniel Gafford as far as minutes at that backup center spot this season. especially, you know, for when those nights are when Boylan's not trying to go super small and playing Markkanen at the five or maybe Thad at the five, when he does want to go big, I think Cornette showed us last night what he can do. He and Gafford bring different skill sets. Obviously, Gafford, high motor guy, he loves to run the floor, crash the boards, block shots. Cornette, in his own right, can block shots, but he spaces the floor in a way that Gafford cannot. I also was, you know, we saw Cornette torch the Bulls a couple times last season when he was with the Knicks, so we were kind of familiar with him. But really paying closer attention to his game last night, 16 minutes, he was 4 of 7 for 9 points, but the thing that impressed me just as much was setting solid screens. Like, we thought that was something we would miss in the departure of Robin Lopez. Luke Cornette, for a guy as thin-framed as he is, sets really solid screens, and he's just like a really smart player. You know, you were talking about making the extra pass, you know, keeping the ball moving. We saw that from a lot of guys on this team last night, but we definitely saw it from Cornette as well. He tacked on 4 assists to his game. So I really liked those kinds of things I saw from Cornette. I think that he's probably going to edge out Gafford as far as minutes of that backup center spot, at least to start the season.
It's kind of cool to see the fact that the Bulls now have, between Thaddeus Young, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., and Luke Cornette, you have 4 big men that legitimately can pass. Like, if you hand them the ball, you can run the offense around them in sets. And I noticed that about Cornette as well, and I really like that. And even some of the shots that he had wide open threes where they were good looks and they were good shots. They just missed. So if he can continue that consistency shooting from three, like you were talking about the spacing as well, and on top of that, be able to make some passes too, I mean, we've got 4 big men, too, on top of all of the guards that the Bulls have that are willing passers and actually can make that smart pass. And I don't know if that comes with just now we're seeing actual veteran guys that have been in the league for 3 or 4 years on top of high basketball IQ players being a part of this Bulls roster that is just so refreshing. Before we move on from like Cornette and some of the bigger guys on this team, I also noticed when Cornette and Markkanen were playing together, I don't know, I need to see a little bit more, but I feel like there's some type of connection there. Those two guys played really, really, really well together, at least against the Pelicans last night. Did you notice the same thing? I noticed Markkanen was getting in a lot of spots. He was scoring the ball a lot better, and it seemed like those two just had some type of chemistry together in the limited minutes that they played together.
Well, absolutely. And honestly, that was one of my favorite plays from last night's game. I'm pretty sure I tweeted about it. It was, I want to say late second quarter, early third quarter. I can't remember where Boylan's rotations broke down, but it was when Markkanen and Cornette were on the floor together. Somebody on New Orleans attacked the basket. I think it may have been Ingram. And Cornette just stepped up to him and really contested the shot. He didn't get a block, but he really beautifully contested the shot and forced a miss that didn't come close. Markkanen was the one who corralled the rebound after Cornette protected the rim, and Markkanen gets out into the open court and hits a bursting speed Kobe White with an outlet pass. Kobe White beats his one man at the rim, gets an and one. It was just a beautiful sequence of great defense, great transition offense, and a really nice finish from Kobe White, who, you know, Bulls fans are just getting so excited about after his couple of preseason games. So absolutely, I think there's something that is going on that exists between Markkanen and Cornette, some chemistry that they're developing. And if we are still concerned about Markkanen having some shortcomings on the defensive end, obviously when Wendell Carter Jr. comes back and is healthy, that's one of the things we were talking about as soon as the Bulls drafted Wendell last year is, okay, well, he can mask some of Markkanen's defensive shortcomings in the front court as a rim protector. It looks like Luke Cornette can very much so do the same kind of thing for Markkanen.
The other thing I had on the big men was, too, is Daniel Gafford has surprised me a lot more than I thought. You know, we talked about our expectations for him going throughout the season and thinking that, you know, he's probably best suited to go down to the G League and get a lot of playing time there and try to develop some of his game. But he's been quietly impressive for me, like, to the point where it might be worth keeping him on the bench should one of these big men need to sit out a game, maybe a short-term injury, somebody misses some time, or maybe somebody's not playing very well. Daniel Gafford, I think, has enough skill and enough basketball IQ to at least send him out there, and you know he would be competent to play, at least from the two preseason games I've seen. So he's definitely farther along than I thought. He still is raw, and there's still some parts of his game that he's going to have to clean up, and he's going to have to work on, but I still think he's farther along than I initially thought. What do you think about Daniel Gafford throughout the first two games?
Yeah, he's a lot less raw than I thought he would be coming in. He is a two-year college player, so a little bit more experienced than the one-and-dones that come into the NBA. But a lot of people were talking about Gafford and the fact that he slid in the 2019 draft after a lot of people thought he would have been, you know, a guaranteed lock for the first round, maybe even a lottery pick, had he entered the draft in 2018. And then for whatever reason, people weren't quite as impressed with his sophomore campaign, at Arkansas. So for whatever reason, he slid and people thought, well, maybe he is more of a project, even though he spent 2 years at the college level. He strikes me as somebody who already has a pretty high basketball IQ and pairs it just with, as I said a minute ago, an insanely high motor. He has a certain Taj Gibson-ness to his game at the way Taj had when Taj was young. He has a certain youthful bounce like a Tyson Chandler back from the Baby Bulls eras, the Twin Towers era that was short-lived here in Chicago. It's nothing fancy. It's nothing that's going to blow you away as far as what he has developed in his offensive game so far, but he knows how to play the pick and roll. He knows how to roll to the rim. He can finish well. One of my favorite attributes of his already, and it is an issue for some people on this Bulls team, like not even jokingly mentioning Felicio as if he were a real part of this team, but something that Wendell has struggled with that I've noticed is his hands. Gafford and his ability to catch the ball and also catch the ball above his head is really, really impressive so far.
Just beyond that, too, the lob dunks that he's making look effortless, too, I think are a lot of fun. Kobe White fed him one last night, and somebody else did, too. So on top of all of that, just being able to have a guy around the rim that you could toss up a lob to, and you know he's going to finish, I think is exciting. And I'm excited to see what Daniel Gafford turns into throughout this year and how he develops. Just speaking of Wendell Carter Jr., just because you brought him up really quick, he didn't play in this game. But the one thing that I did notice that the Bulls are missing is presence on the inside on the defensive end. We saw Zion Williamson just absolutely dominate. I think he finished with, 32 points? Most of those coming...
29
points. Most of those coming in the paint.
And he was 12 of 13, and it was all around the rim.
So I noticed that with guys like Luke Kornet and Lauri Markkanen and Thaddeus Young, these guys trying to defend Zion Williamson and some of these other guys that are trying to get to the basket. And that's where I felt like the Pelicans, for the most part, at least through the first three quarters, were getting most of their buckets. They didn't have a whole lot of success in the first half shooting threes, but a lot of their buckets were coming inside. So I think once Carter gets put back into this rotation, we see him fully, he's going to help the Bulls a lot there. But that was something that I noticed that the Bulls were missing right off the bat, was the fact that they didn't have any presence on the inside, and it was allowing the Pelicans to score a lot. So hopefully Carter gets healthy, implemented back into the roster, and that kind of cleans up that one concern that I really had on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think the defense overall is still going to be a struggle for this team this season. I think Thad Young and his presence is certainly going to help. A healthy Wendell will certainly help. Sadoransky, his length, basically just some of the length that this team has guarding the perimeter. Like they have some competent defensive pieces, but it's about putting it all together. And they were one of the worst defensive teams in the league last year for all of Boylan's harping. So some of that was a depleted roster. But if this team stays healthy, there's no reason they can't make a considerable improvement on the defensive end. But I think that you're going to see a much more marked improvement offensively than you will defensively this season. But based on the way that the NBA is going, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I would much rather have a team with a competent, high-octane, fast-paced offense like the one that we saw for 2.5 quarters last night than an elite defensive unit, because in the NBA, good offense beats good defense 100% of the time.
Just quickly, let's touch on Otto Porter really fast. I thought he had a really, really nice game last night. And again, what we had been talking about all offseason, I felt like he's going to be the part of this team that's going to be sort of the glue that's going to keep this starting unit all together. And he's playing off of what he did last year in those 15 games. It seems like he has not missed a beat throughout the offseason. And while he did miss a few open jumpers, it's good to see that he's wide open. And that's the thing, is like beyond Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen, you finally have on top of Otto Porter Jr., other guys that can shoot the ball. There's other threats that the guys have to stay on. At least the defense has to stay on. So it creates open shots. And I felt like Otto Porter, on the defense and offensive side, played really well. He had 16 points in this one. He was 7 for 13 and had two threes. And he had 8 assists and 7 rebounds. So he's going to do a little bit of everything for the Bulls. And I think, again, adding Otto Porter to this team really has helped elevate a lot of these other guys' games. And even if you're not noticing Otto Porter on every possession.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, like, if you look at his box score from last night, you know, you touched on some of it there. 16 points on 7 of 13, 2 of 5 behind the arc, 8 assists, 7 rebounds. He did that in 22 minutes. I think coming into this season, you were going to say to yourself, all right, if Otto gives us, you know, somewhere between 15 and 18 points a game, you know, 6 or 7 assists, 6 or 7 rebounds, and does so shooting close to 50% from the field, 40% from behind the three-point line in 30 minutes, that's ideal. That's what you want from Otto. And he did it in 22 minutes last night. So, I mean, imagine a full game of Otto playing somewhere around 32, maybe 33 minutes a game, and he can be exactly what this team needs.
I'm very excited to see him. And I mean, if Zach LaVine continues to shoot the ball the way he did, Otto Porter's only going to help. And I think figuring out the closer we get to opening nights, the more we'll kind of understand what the guards are going to look like. And then getting Lauri Markkanen more involved, I think, is going to be something that Jim Boylan is going to have to figure out. And same thing with Chris Fleming, like trying to figure out how to get him involved. And that's something that I wanted to touch on really quickly, too, just because I noticed it in the first game as well. But before I do that, just wanted to mention to you guys that Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com. When entering the promo code Locked On at checkout, that's $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com, promo code Locked On. So the thing about Markkanen, especially in that first game, Matt, was the fact that he didn't get involved at all in that first quarter. It took damn near 6 minutes for Markkanen to even touch the ball. Like, if you go back and watch that first 6 minutes of that Bucks game, he didn't touch the ball at all. It was like he was standing there by himself, like, not really getting involved. And that first time he got involved was actually himself getting himself involved. He picked up a rebound and tried to take a shot. So I don't know if this is a struggle for the Bulls necessarily, or if it's a more of a Markkanen personal thing where it's almost like he's not commanding the ball as often. And maybe he doesn't feel the need to do that with shooters around him now, or maybe it's just early trying to find his way on the offensive side. But I'd like to see him be more aggressive throughout and just at times demanding the ball when he's open, and also the Bulls getting him involved, especially early. You leave him out in the first 6-8 minutes of the game, teams are going to plan for that, and they're going to notice and realize that. So I think they need to make a priority of getting Markkanen on top of LaVine and Porter involved early on in games.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I have one thing that is really worrying and bothering me that I don't like so far through two preseason games, it's the passiveness of Lowry. We kind of talk about it. We talked about it last year at times when he was kind of going through his lulls. Is it about his teammates not being able to find him in the right spots, or is it about Lowry not putting his foot down and asserting himself and demanding the ball? And it could be a combination of both. I think, you know, Satoransky will help more so than Chris Dunn ever did. I think, you know, Chris Dunn, he even saw it last night at times. His court vision is still lacking. So, you know, maybe that'll help Markkanen some, even, you know, and like the high intelligence basketball people that they have brought in, like Thad Young and like Otto Porter Jr., who can recognize when Lowry is open and in an advantageous spot on the floor or has an advantageous matchup and get him the ball. But Lowry has to recognize it himself, and Lowry has to demand the ball. We saw some really nice, beautiful shooting stroke and touch from Lowry through the first two preseason games. You know, I think he's shooting like, you know, 50% from behind the three-point line through their first two preseason games, and that's great. And their little two-man game that he plays with Zach for the pick and pop is great, but it's not nearly enough as far as what we are expecting and what we want to see Markkanen turn into. Year three, I mean, this is big time for Markkanen. You know, he had some injury issues in his first two NBA seasons. Coming into this season healthy, and he needs to prove something. And, you know, some of it's on his teammates getting him involved early, like you said, but I think a lot of it is also on Lowry asserting himself in his third season.
And I think you see two opposite sides of the spectrum, too, just from these two preseason games. Nights like last night, it's not really a concern if Markkanen's involved or not, because you have Zach LaVine going off. Otto Porter's having a really good night on offense. And it seems like the other guys, whether it's the second unit or not, seem to be filling in those other pieces, scoring the ball. So Markkanen's, the concern of Markkanen not scoring, not really shown in this game, especially when the starters are playing in those first three quarters. We don't notice it as much. But when you start to notice it was when you play teams like the Bucks, or you have games like Game 1, where coming out in that first 6 or 8 minutes of the game, Zach LaVine is missing a couple of shots. It seems like guys are trying to play one-on-one. You need somebody else to get involved. It seems like guys are not hitting down their shots. And so if Zach LaVine, especially early, isn't your go-to option, or maybe he's just missing a few shots here and there, you got to try to get somebody else involved. And I think that's where we need to see Lowry be aggressive and notice that. Notice that other guys are missing their shots, need somebody else to get involved to try to get those other guys open. So you won't, on nights where Zach LaVine is popping off, it won't be as noticeable. But when he's not, especially early on, Lauri Markkanen has to be aggressive, demand the ball, demand plays, run for him. And I think it's only going to open up other things for these guys. So I think it's going to be something that they're going to have to work on. And like you had mentioned too, I hope that pick and pop game between Markkanen and LaVine continues and they continue to use that. And I mean, especially Markkanen, he can do it with other guards too. If he's out there playing with Kobe White or maybe Thomas Satoransky, you can play that two-man game with all of those guys. I think Markkanen is competent, more than competent enough to do that. And same thing with the guard play too. We've got competent guards to do that. So it'll be just a matter of not only Lowry being aggressive, but two, the Bulls being aware, and whoever the ball handler is being aware that they need to get him involved, just to kind of spread things out. So yeah, that'll be something I think we should keep our eyes on throughout the rest of these preseason games to see if there's any type of change there. Quickly, before we get out of here, Matt, I wanted to talk quickly about Kobe White. I am damn near impressed with Kobe White so far, man. My expectations were very, very mild, but he is making some mistakes, which is fine. I love the aggressiveness from him, though. The willingness to just make aggressive passes and not feel like he's feared every time he makes a mistake. It seems like he brushes it off, lets it go, and goes on to the next play. I mean, there's two or three passes he made. He tried to make choices on tight-knit passes that didn't work out last night. But still, I love the aggressiveness from him and the willingness to just make mistakes and it's okay and move on and learn from it. But I've been very impressed with what we've seen from Kobe White so far.
Absolutely. I think he's exceeded expectations so far, at least my expectations. I know that some Bulls fans' expectations for him were really high just because of his pedigree as a UNC product and a number 7 pick. But, you know, you mentioned the mistakes. You know, I think he got a little too excited and ahead of himself at times in their first preseason game. I think he shot the ball a little too much in their first preseason game, you know, just kind of getting a little bit of tunnel vision. Last night, you know, he went 1 of 5 from behind the three-point line. The one that he did make in transition was a beauty, but I think that until he becomes a little bit more reliable behind that NBA three-point line, he needs to not shoot as many threes as he shot at UNC, because he liked shooting a lot of threes at UNC. But, you know, he had 3 assists to only 1 turnover last night. One of his assists was this beautiful bounce pass that displayed his already impressive court vision in transition. I can't remember who it was who made the backdoor cut. It might have been Cornette or Thad Young, but I mean, it was just a beautifully seen passing lane that looked like it wasn't even there, that Kobe White saw in transition and made a beautiful pass. So not only are you impressed by his speed and his coast-to-coast speed, just getting downhill, getting to the basket? He didn't get to the free throw line as much last night, but we saw him get to the free throw line a lot on Monday night against Milwaukee. There's a lot to like about his game. And also, surprisingly, I'm impressed by how competent he is defensively. You know, and I think maybe people thought that he was more undersized than he is, but he does have some legit size for his position. And I think it's a little bit misleading. Maybe it's like the afro, or I don't know what it is, but he actually is like a legit 6'4", 6'5", and he has really put the effort in on the defensive end so far, and I love to see that.
You see it. It's funny because he's like, when he's playing defense, he's doing like jumping jacks to guard guys. He's using like jumping all over the place, throwing his body around. So I am like, there's been one-on-one defensive sets where he's locked a guy down, which I've been impressed with. And just going back to the shooting thing really quick, when he does knock down his threes, seems like he really loves that right side corner three. When he's open, he's knocking it down. His shot and his stroke look beautiful. So anybody that was concerned about the level, remember this talk about Kobe White's shot and his where he's shooting it from, and it's too low of a shot, and people didn't think it was going to translate over to the NBA. That's clearly not true, because I think his shot looks pretty decent. But like you said, I think until he gets more comfortable and more consistent, maybe taper back those threes a little bit. But still, I think his effort too, speaking of defensively, how about catching the Pelicans on a fast break by themselves after a bad turnover? Kobe White chases J.J. Redick all the way down the floor and makes him miss that layup. Should somebody else have had followed, the Bulls would have had an easy rebound. That turned into an easy bucket. But little things like that where Kobe White sees a turnover and he's willing to give that extra effort, chase that guy down and make him miss a free throw, I'm sure, or make him miss a layup. I'm sure Jim Boylan was just absolutely exploding with joy on the sidelines when he saw that.
It's all about those grit and toughness plays, right? I mean, clearly Kobe is trying to prove himself to be, yes, a rookie, but someone who deserves a spot in this rotation. And I think what he's done so far, Jim Boylan can't ignore that. You know, we saw Satoransky take Chris Dunn's starting spot Wednesday night, and we heard in Boylan's postgame comments that this whole, you know, Ferris wheel of starting point guards is coming to an end soon. They're going to have an answer. He said, I'll have an answer soon as far as our starting point guard. I think that answer will be Satoransky. Chris Dunn in 23 minutes off the bench last night, 1 of 5 from the field, 0 of 2 from downtown. Yeah, he had 5 rebounds and 5 assists, but he also had 4 turnovers. And even when we talk about Chris Dunn as a plus player defensively, here we were just a second ago talking about how pleasantly surprised we are with Kobe White's defense. Chris Dunn was just completely 100% outplayed by Kobe White last night. And yes, it's preseason and it's a small sample size, but if that's the stuff that we continue to see with, you know, last night White getting 27 minutes, Dunn getting 23, if White continues to look this good and Dunn continues to look that bad, this whole plan to like talk up Chris Dunn and try to hype him and put some confidence behind him so that they can make him look good to trade him. At some point the fans will riot if Chris Dunn is getting minutes instead of Kobe White.
And I think you're going to see rotations where Satoransky, White, and Dunn are all going to be playing at some point or another. But I did notice that about Chris Dunn. He's still making those terrible turnover mistakes where it's like you just can't have it. You just can't have those types of turnovers. It's like little easy, lazy passes that he makes. And it's also, too, sometimes it seems like he doesn't really know where he wants to go with the ball when he's on offense. Like, his court vision doesn't seem to be translating as well as it did in times we've seen before from him. And I don't know if that's a confidence thing. I don't know if that's a not knowing his teammates as well, not knowing the second unit as well. Whatever the case may be, though, seems like a lot of hesitancy from Chris Dunn. And in those bad turnovers again, man, I just can't get over that. He's got to eliminate those bad turnovers. We talked about that with Zach LaVine as well. But for Chris Dunn, that's huge for him. And right now, the first two preseason games, and I get it, it's just preseason, and we still have a few games left to evaluate these guys. But I think Kobe White and Thomas Satoransky, without a doubt, have outplayed Chris Dunn.
I think so, too. And I think that the one way that you can still find ways to play Kobe and Dunn meaningful minutes is by playing three guard lineups, because you're so thin at the wing, right? Like, whether it's shifting Satoransky to the wing and playing, you know, Dunn and Kobe White together at other times in the backcourt, playing Kobe off the ball while Chris is your primary ball handler. Just because of the currently the injury to Chandler Hutchison, and also the, yes, Denzel is back and playing, but looks like he has maybe 8 minutes in him before he gets gassed. I mean, it's nice to see him out there knocking down threes again, but he has looked completely shot after a few trips up and down the court. So I don't know how much you're going to be able to rely on Denzel. And if Boylan faces those realities and says, all right, well, you know, I still would like to get Chris Dunn some minutes, but I can't ignore this amazingly impressive rookie Kobe White. That's the way that you can find a find a way to like shoehorn both of them into the rotation. It's because there's not a lot of depth at the wing right now.
Last thing I'll say is too, Stacey King absolutely grilled Chris Dunn right at the start of the fourth quarter. If you're watching the Bulls broadcast last night, talking about a play in which they came down, it was a 3-on-2. Chris Dunn was wide open in the corner, and instead of when he got the ball kicked to him for a wide open three and just taking the shot, he decided to pass it off again, and it ended up not turning into a bucket. And Stacey King's like, man, you have to take that shot. We can live with you missing that shot, but the fact that you just decided to pass it off and give it up, like, you have to make that. You have to at least attempt that shot or try to drive to the basket. And Stacey King was 100% right on that. And I think that's something that Chris Dunn's going to have to realize. It's like, dude, we can deal with you making you missing that shot, but you got to take that shot. You got to take that wide open shot or drive to the basket. So I think it was good hearing Stacey King kind of get on Chris Dunn, too. And it's like, it's about time, man. Like, you're in your what? This is his what? Third season? Fourth? Going into his fourth season? So it's time to make those little adjustments that we need to see from a top-tier player, at least once was, coming out of the draft. So those are little things that he needs to clean up. Last thing, though, I have is on Denzel Valentine real quick. You're totally right. I think he looks gassed, and I don't know if that's just not playing for the last 2 years. Also, too, I noticed in his jump shot, he's not getting as much elevation as he did once. And obviously, Denzel Valentine wasn't a jump-out-of-the-gym type of player before he got hurt. But still, like, some of those long three-pointers he was taking, they were short by 2 or 3 feet. You were seeing it clank off the front of the rim. It just doesn't seem like he's getting a whole hell of a lot of elevation on his jump shot. So I don't know if that's just getting strength back into his ankles and his knees just from not playing or what it is. But I did notice that as well. But he was making some nice passes. I will give him that. It's nice to see a guy on the second unit outside of maybe Kobe White or Chris Dunn to actually be able to make competent passes like Denzel was.
Yeah, he did have 3 assists last night. Turn the ball over.
One of that lob being to Gafford as
right,
well.
Yeah, which was nice. I think Denzel's always been an underrated passer in the spots on the court where he doesn't get in over his head. When he tries to drive and kick or like drive and dish or dump off, he doesn't have the skill and athleticism to do those kinds of passes. But just in the flow of the game and keeping the ball moving and finding an open man, yeah, Denzel's always been a solid passer. I mean, that goes back to his days leading those offenses at Michigan State. So that's always been there. But I agree with you. Not only, did you see him huffing and puffing trying to get back on defense sometimes last night, but and also on Monday, but the lack of lift under his jump shot. He was shooting three balls that were just flat. And, you said short, clanking off the front of the rim. A couple of them were so short that they were air balls. So maybe that's the conditioning, and he just needs to build up some of that, some of that wind back. And maybe there is still some kind of lingering issue. I mean, those knees he has are awfully taped up right now. And maybe that's a necessity. But it certainly looks like right now he... After his first two threes, he has no lift left in his knees for the remainder of the game. So, I don't know, whatever that is, the Bulls need to figure it out, and they need to figure out if Valentine can be relied upon.
The last thing I've got is just two things from the broadcast really quick. This being the last year of Stacey King and Neil Funk together, Neil Funk retiring at the end of the year, the one is the constant bagging on Brandon Ingram all game last night. It was hilarious. And they were spot on about it, too. It's like Brandon Ingram, every time he touched the ball, was shooting it. No matter what, where he was.
Yeah.
He was taking the ball one-on-one and trying to shoot which I thought was hilarious from Stacey King and Neil Funk.
Somebody on Twitter told me, because I made a comment about Ingram's, having a rough night, and somebody told me, they were like, yeah, he's tall Blakeney. And I laughed so hard. It's like, yeah, that's kind of what he looked like last night. 9 points on 3 of 9. I was shocked when I went back and looked at the box score and saw that Ingram only took 9 shots.
Same.
Because it felt like twice that.
The last thing I have is Neil Funk at the end of the game. And hey, this is what preseason's for. It's to clean up some of this, knock the rust off of you. But he kept calling Nikhil Alexander Walker Nikhil Alexander Williams, like for the last 5 minutes of the game. And nobody corrected him either. So I just noticed that really quick. But again, just knocking the rust off. It's preseason. Every one of these guys, including the broadcast, including us, is trying to knock off the rust. But I found that kind of funny, too. I'm like, is this a different player? We talk about Alexander Walker, the rookie that got got drafted out of Virginia Tech, and sure enough, it was him. But I just found that funny. I'm sure other Bulls fans noticed that as well.
Would it have been worse if he called him Alexander Williams or Gilgeous Alexander? If he switched it with his relative, I mean, that's not just a knocking off the preseason rust thing. That's a Neil's getting old and he calls people and players by the wrong names all the time kind of thing. But you know, you can't knock Neil. I mean, I hope he enjoys his retirement tour in his farewell season, because the dude's a legend.
Well deserved, absolutely. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Very excited to talk about actual competent basketball for once. So if you guys got your thoughts, 331-979-1369, the place to hit us up. You can drop all of your texts and all of your voicemails there. You can hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Before we sign off, just wanted to mention to you guys, as well as you did on yesterday's episode, Matt, is we have a brand new Locked On podcast joining the Chicago family. It's Locked On Black. Jay Zawoski is the host. He's also an executive producer over at 670 The Score. So he's done a fantastic job covering the Hawks before joining here at Locked On, the Locked On Podcast Network. So very excited to have him part of the Chicago team. And I think that fills every team up but the White Sox, and hoping to have a White Sox show before the start of the season next year. But that's 4 out of the 5 teams covered now. So give Jay Zawoski a follow on Twitter, and also give Locked On Blackhawks a listen if you're a huge hockey fan. He does a fantastic job breaking down Hawks games, and I know for a lot of you out there that really do love the Blackhawks, this is going to be a great daily podcast for you. So we're very excited about the launch of the newest sports channel covering the NHL. As you know by listening to this show, we feature local experts covering the biggest news, and now we're covering the ice with daily hockey podcasts. So check out the upcoming season preview for the Locked On Blackhawks, and you'll find your favorite NHL team on our website at www.lockedonpodcast.com/NHL. We'll have more NFL, MLB, or NBA news for you tomorrow. We're signing off here. We're going to leave you with a 5-minute preview from Jay Zawoski and Locked On Blackhawks at the end of this episode. Give that a listen. And if you really like what you're hearing, go give him a subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcast. He'll be sure to be there. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
I thought it was a real positive.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.
Hey, this is Jay Zawoski, host of Locked On Blackhawks, and welcome to my Locked On Blackhawks season preview. It's going to be a very interesting year for the Chicago Blackhawks. A lot of question marks, a lot of hope based on how last season ended. So in my mind, there are 5 keys to the Blackhawks season this year. Number one, they need repeat performances from Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. In case you missed it, they both had career years in 2018-2019. Toews had 35 goals and 81 points in 82 games. That's a career high. Patrick Kane scored 44 goals and 110 points. Despite that, the Hawks did not make the playoffs. I mean, if you'd told me before the season began that both those guys were going to have career years, I would have said playoffs 100% certainty. But it didn't happen. However, the 2019-20 Blackhawks, the roster, at least on paper, is significantly improved. But if either of these two stars, Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane, have a significant drop-off, it might just offset those roster improvements. So it's unlikely that Toews is going to duplicate those numbers, but it's encouraging to see that he's still capable of an offensive season like that. With the additions of Andrew Shaw and Zach Smith, both guys that can win faceoffs that are right-handed, they could take some of the penalty kill pressure away from Jonathan Toews, and that could benefit his offensive game. If he can stay in the 70-plus point range, I think the Hawks will be fine. The second key is continued growth from Alex DeBrincat and Dylan Strome. DeBrincat, who just signed a 3-year contract extension, is coming off a 41-goal sophomore season. He's 21 years old. To say he could score 50 goals is not a stretch. He was impressive last season, but there were some times where he would go through some extended goalless streaks. With the Blackhawks added depth offensively, he'll probably find himself skating with better players more consistently. He will start the season with Dylan Strome as his center. Those two are best friends off the ice. They found immediate chemistry on the ice, so I would expect those two to be paired together early. And speaking of Strome, when the Hawks got him from Arizona last season for Nick Schmaltz, he immediately started contributing. In his 58 games with the Blackhawks, he had 51 points. If he matches that pace this season, that'd give him 72 points in 82 games. That means the Hawks would have at least four forwards, Taves, Kane, DeBrincat, and Strome, capable of 70-plus point seasons. It's hard to imagine a team with that much forward depth missing the playoffs. The next key is improving the defense, and to me, this is the biggest one. The Hawks' defense can't be worse than they were last year, can they? They were horrible. They had the worst penalty kill in the league, only stopping 72% of the power plays they faced. They allowed 3.5 goals per game. For reference, the Lightning had the league's best offense. They scored 3.89 goals per game. There's no way the Hawks' defense will be as bad as it was last season. They added two veteran, steady defensemen in Olli Maatta and Calvin DeHaan. And while Mata's coming off a down season with the Penguins, he's won two Stanley Cups, and he's only 25 years old. I think that his best years are likely still ahead of him. As far as DeHaan goes, he's a traditional stay-at-home defenseman. He'll bring stability and leadership, and he can play all situations. I don't expect him to get a lot of power play time, but he should get some. So once Calvin DeHaan is healthy, he should plug right into the lineup and contribute. Now, the other keys to me, Kirby Dach and Adam Boqvist, the two Hawks top prospects. Both those guys, in my opinion, should be on the roster to start the season. Boqvist will begin the year down in Rockford, where he can hone his defensive game a little bit. Kirby Dach is either going to play in Chicago or in Saskatoon. There's no AHL for him because of the agreement the NHL and CHL have together, so the Hawks cannot send him to Rockford. So once he's finally healthy, he's going to get a look at the NHL level. They need both those guys to contribute, probably for more than half of this NHL season. They also need a depth winger to emerge. Alex Nylander scored the Hawks' first goal of the season. That's an encouraging start. Dominic Kubalik was one of their better forwards throughout the preseason and has shown that he belongs at the NHL level. Nylander's got a higher ceiling, but a lower floor. Kubalik's got a lower ceiling, but he probably won't bottom out as much as Nylander could. Nylander could still be a bust. There's still that possibility that Alex Nylander is a bust, but after one game the Blackhawks have played so far, he looks pretty good, and he started the season on the top line, so that has to be encouraging for people watching the Hawks. Whatever happens, it's going to be a really exciting season. My name's Jay Zawoski. I am the host of Locked On Blackhawks on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.